I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana. Thanks for joining us for the podcast today, brought to you by Blackfoot Communications.
Does your home qualify for a $70 discount on your internet bill? Blackfoot Communications is proud to partner with the FCC to help ensure that households can afford the broadband necessary for work, school, healthcare, and more. For more information on this federal program and to see if your household qualifies for a discount on your internet service, visit goblackfoot.com/ACP. Connect to more with Blackfoot Communications.
So we do ask, what is going on in the banking world? It's a world apart, it seems like, from my understanding of everyday life, but it ought not to be. Maybe that's my own fault, but did the Silicon Valley Bank failure crack open a floodgate? How has the response from the government and the financial world helped, or has it hindered this unease? Montana financial consultant Mike Bondra to join us today as we dig into this current financial disturbance, upheaval, I will call it. Thank you for being here. We're 2 decades strong and working on three, an objective perspective, Voices of Montana. Well, we look at this banking thing, and they're probably, you know, very, very concerned about that. But let's dig into it a little bit. It started with this Silicon Valley Bank where it failed, and they were out. They were way out on thin ice. Almost 90% of their resources, their deposits, were not insured. And there are other indications that this bank and other banks like them are out on thin ice. Does the financial world listen to them? Yes and no. I think some do and some don't. But I don't know that our response, our government's response, or the financial world's response was helpful. Or perhaps, I guess you look at the terrible fallout here, where, you know, we had failures in 2008, two banks too big to fail, and I wasn't sold then. I'm still not sold now on too big to fail. I don't mind getting in there in circumstances where it's very, very necessary. But politically, we don't know. We can't define what is necessary politically anymore, especially when it comes to our financial world. Let the chips fall where they may was a government response, but no. A possible government response, but it was sort of this big daddy thing again, and come in and bail out. Let's see if that's how that has played out. Now we're looking at a month thereabouts of the aftermath. Mike Bondra is with us, and it's a pleasure to catch up with him again. It's been since the new year. He's a certified financial planner and a friend of the show. Good morning. How you doing, Mike?
I'm good, Tom. Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I appreciate you being here. I don't understand all this that's happened. I kind of have an inkling about it. There's a lot written every day. There's something written about it. What's your initial take when SVB failed? And why I like this discussion, Michael, and you can respond to that too, is because you're not the Fed Reserve. You're not the government. You have a relationship with investors, and so it matters. So you see this response almost immediately. But and thank you for that. But what's your initial take, sir?
Yeah, you know, Tom, I've got mixed emotions on this. I've kind of saw this coming a little bit, I'll say, because yeah. I just am keenly aware of some historic dynamics that are playing out in our economy with inflation being what it is, and then the interest rate explosion that has occurred over the past year and a half, let's say. So I saw some of these issues maybe coming. I don't know that I saw a banking crisis. I don't think we can even call it a banking crisis. Right. I'd rather call it a banking scare. Maybe I'm just nitpicking the verbiage, but it is an eye-opening thing to watch. You know, a bank get handed off to the FDIC and basically close its doors, and all the deposits are taken over, people can't get their money out, and that kind of creates more chaos and panic. And, you know, it's at that point, it's a little bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy, which right. is very problematic. But it is eye-opening to watch this play out. Although, you know, if you understand the bond markets and you understand how these banks operate, it's not polarizing that there was a couple banks that were kind of dumb with, I mean, that's, that's my highly technical way of describing their actions, but I would just say they were really dumb how they approached the last year and a half with managing their banks.
Well, and I think, why don't talk about those ways then that they were really dumb. Break it down for us. That, and I've read some things there, and it does point to some personal mistakes made, and maybe some selfishness on that personal level as well. But talk about some of those mistakes. What was really dumb about this?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll try to just really simplify this. Right. You know, a bank is kind of a funding conduit, right? Like we all take our hard earned money and we need to put it on deposit somewhere because, you know, you don't want to just throw it in your safe at your house. That presents a major risk. And so you say, okay, I'm going to put it on deposit with, you know, a bank that's convenient for me or that I trust, hopefully. And then they take those deposits and they can loan out those funds to borrowers, whether it's somebody borrowing for a mortgage or a bank or a business borrowing to expand their operations, you know, for whatever reason, and they've got a process for reviewing loans. And what happens in a rising rate environment is that you have some loans that were previously made that are no longer good loans, and when you have rapidly rising rates, it creates even more pressure and tension on those bad loans, and businesses fail and mortgages fail and properties are underwater. We've seen that cycle throughout history over and over again. And then on the other side, I think what really got SVB and Signature Bank and First Republic and HSBC and Credit Suisse, what got a lot of those banks in particular trouble is actually how they managed the bank's investments themselves, the bank's assets themselves, where they made some bad investments, not bad loans. They made some bad loans too, but I think they made, from the sounds of it, some really stupid investments. They were overly invested in cryptocurrencies, Tom. And we had discussions about that wacky concept, and they had some really poorly managed. I honestly don't think it was the stock part of the bank portfolio, the equities. I don't think, from the sounds of it, it sounds like that's down, but that's not the shocking part. I think they made some really bad decisions with bond investments, and we can get into that if you want. We've talked about the bond teeter-totter before and why rising rates kind of cripple bond values, and we've seen that in spades over the past year and a half. But I really think that they had some bad loans and they made some bad investments, and when you do that on a grand scale, man alive. And then you have a run on deposits. Oh, gosh, it's the perfect storm for a bank.
Let's talk about those bad decisions again, because, you know, again, Mike Vondra is with us, a certified financial planner. He's third generation financial planners, grandfather, father, and now he's been doing it Montana as well. Appreciate you being here. Those bad decisions, all right? The president just vetoed restrictions on ESG considerations for investors like BlackRock. In other words, investing now has taken on a whole new social meaning. And were some of those bad decisions part of this? Oh, I don't know how to frame it. I want to call it wokeness, but that's not fair in the financial world. At least some of these encouragements. How does that play in, Mike?
Well, I think what you're getting to there on a grander scale, I would just put the term. I'd use the term distraction. I just think there's a lot of distractions right now in the corporate in the business world, and whether it's ESG, which again stands for environmental, social and governance. It's a way for these. It's a virtuous way for companies to kind of signal to the public their virtues through these kind of criteria: environmental, social, and governance. It's gotten highly political, and then DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, which is I think a noble agenda. I think the agenda behind these things, like at its grassroots, Tom, is noble, but of course it's just absolutely been completely politicized and made into a political weapon, and it's been manipulated. And And I would say ESG, DEI, woke, left, lefties, righty. I mean, I would put it all under this big category of distractions. And that's definitely happened at these banks. I know that there's been a lot of reporting. I don't know the exact facts, but I do know that certain people in the banks that should have been focused on risk analysis were deployed and looking at other things like ESG, DEI, left, right, whatever. And they're just distracted rather than doing risk analysis, which is what a bank ought to be doing when it comes to making loans and making investments. So I just put it all under the banner of distracted.
Well, let me ask you to consider this. And I get that, but I don't know that that goes far enough. Their fundamentals are not being practiced. Basic capitalistic or even financial fundamentals, I think, mm-hmm. are not being practiced here. And how long can we sustain that?
Well, that's a good point. And I'll go back and let's talk about another dummy. I mean, who's the dummy in the room if the kids misbehave and then the parents permit it? Like who's more at fault? Because I think that's what we have happening here. And I heard you talking about the Fed, but I would say in the economic playground, so to speak, I would say banks are kind of playing in the playground. You got investors, capitalists, right? You got business owners, you've got employees, entrepreneurs. They're all playing in the playground. I would argue that one of the adults that needs to be supervising it, one of the adults is the Fed. I think legislators are maybe another part of that. Regulators are adults. Theoretically, they should be adults on the playground. So who's worse, when the kids misbehave or the Fed permitting it, right? And just handing out parachutes left and right, saying, do whatever you want. We're going to back you. We're going to guarantee all deposits up. No limit. You can speed. You can misbehave on the playground. You can do whatever. And we're going to take care of you no matter the crash.
Wow.
Too big to fail, you know, limitless lifeline. I mean, Tom, that's a huge issue in my mind.
Yes. Yeah. In mine, too. And the Fed Reserve, I got to take a break, Mike, and we'll come on back and maybe mm-hmm. talk a little bit about the Fed Reserve. I think they made just a ton of mistakes in this. In fact, I don't know how they can conceivably have erred any worse in this situation, in my mind. But lots more to cover as we'll come on back and, you know, welcome banking here today on Voices of Montana.
Does your home qualify for a $70 discount on your internet bill? Blackfoot Communications is proud to partner with the FCC to help ensure that households can afford the broadband necessary for work, school, healthcare, and more. For more information on this federal program and to see if your household qualifies for a discount on your internet service, visit goblackfoot.com/ACP. Connect to more with Blackfoot Communications.
Oh, that's a little cold, Cody, I think. Yeah, yeah. Hey, welcome back. Voices of Montana. Mike Vondra is with us, certified financial planner. Mike, I know you're getting phone calls and we're looking at this banking thing. You're still managing to have a little fun, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're still keeping a smile on. Honestly, I take great pride, Tom, in standing in the batter's box, even when the pitches come high and tight. And
good.
That's what you do as a financial planner. You hang in there with clients and you fight for their best interests. So no, we're having a good time over here.
Good. Good. I mean, life is, you know, we're going to have challenges, but there's no reason you can't be filled with joy. There's lots of love around. I hope that's the case
right. Anyway.
Exactly. So we'll talk about our path forward too for Main Street and for our neighbors in just a bit. But I couldn't be more disappointed in the Fed Reserve. And I know there have been a lot of calls to audit that. I'd like to see some steam behind that. I'm not sure. Critics go deep into the history of the Fed Reserve and are very, very critical, very suspicious of it. But with the tools that they had in their toolbox, I don't think they could have played this any worse.
Yeah, I mean, Tom, I've talked on the show before. I mean, I've been critical of them. I mean, I could honestly be critical of them going back decades, but I think that the Fed has increasingly succumbed to political pressures, both from both sides, right? I mean, we all watched Donald Trump pressure them into certain decisions, and now we've seen them, I believe, basically mismanage post-pandemic to present day. It wasn't rocket science when you have Congress just dumping oodles and oodles and oodles of money into the economy. It's not a novel concept to think, I wonder if that money is going to create upward price pressure on all of the goods and services that money can go towards, right? Like, that's economics 101. When you have an abundance of supply of money and then low unemployment, all of the factors, man, we just said, hey, we're going to probably get some price pressure here, which is what we call inflation. We saw that play out in high, really high increments, and it's still very high. It's funny that we're celebrating that inflation's come all the way down to 6%. That's hilarious. That's three times what we would like it to average. They'd like it to average 2. So we're triple the goal, and we're celebrating that somehow. And the Fed is, I think they started raising rates about 15 months ago. They started about a year late, and that's had catastrophic effects, Tom.
Yeah. Yeah. And we could bang on them an awful lot. I guess what we have to do is look at what they did wrong, how to counter that, and what they maybe perhaps what they've done right in all of this. Go ahead and step back and maybe answer that, along with not just the Fed, but the rest of the financial community, because I feel that they have felt the weight of this a lot heavier than the public. The public has kind of, I think, held their powder back a little bit to wait and see on this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think you're right. The labor markets make it so, you know, the employment landscape, Tom, that's why they've been unwilling to define any of the economic activity as recessionary. They've been unwilling to define anything as recessionary, although we've experienced what I would call a technical recession, but maybe not a formal one. We because of the labor markets, because of the employment dynamics. If you want a job, you can have two these days, right? Like, there's just so many openings. So, to that degree, I say, okay, maybe it's not a recession, but a lot of the economy is experiencing some sort of a contraction. And I think, you know, on the good side of things, what the Fed has done is they've kind of confronted the mistake that they made, where they kept interest rates way too low for way too long. Mm-hmm. They were backing way too many loans for way too long. And they've confronted that. They've stopped leveraging the federal balance sheet, which is a complicated subject, but they have increased interest rates, borrowing by considerable amounts. And that has a dampening effect on the economy. So it's working. I think they were really late. And now they've had to be overly violent, in my opinion. I think that they're probably intentionally trying to drive us into a shallow recession. They're hoping it would just be a shallow, quick, easygoing, what they would call a soft landing. And I think that's still on the table. But I do think a much bigger recession is also on the table. And although I'm not willing to predict that, I think that's on the table. So they are slowing things down. I just think they started a little late, and now they've had to be a little more violent with the interest rate increases than was probably necessary had they confronted this when inflation really started to rear its head back in 2020 and 2021.
Got to save some time for the path forward for Main Street and for our neighborhoods. Mike Vondra is with us, a financial planner, a certified financial planner, third generation in that industry in Montana as well. We're back with more. I got some text messages to catch up on as well.
Does your home qualify for a $70 discount on your internet bill? Blackfoot Communications is proud to partner with the FCC to help ensure that households can afford the broadband necessary for work, school, healthcare, and more. For more information on this federal program and to see if your household qualifies for a discount on your internet service, visit goblackfoot.com/ACP. Connect to more with Blackfoot Communications.
Welcome back. We're talking about this banking. I don't know if it's a failure. It certainly is a failure. It's an upheaval. Mike Vonder is with us. He referred to it as a crisis. Thank goodness. I think that the Mike, and thanks for being here again. Scott Kulbeck will join us. We'll talk. It's National Ag Day. That's a little bit later on. I get the sense that the pandemic has maybe sort of numbed us a little bit because, oh, here's another crisis. I'm not going to rush out now because I don't know what I believe is a crisis anymore. I'll just throw that out there. But let me get some of these text messages out, too, because we'll run out of time. This one talks about China's influence here. The company or the country possibly had some influence in the SVB bank failure. I'll have to look into that. But what's the opinion of the guest, Chinese intentional influence to help, this failure? China's not our friend. There's no doubt about that. My wife and I never spent less than another text message here than 8% on car loans and house loans over the past 40 years. I don't get it where people think this little increase in interest rates and inflation is atrocious. I'm not sure everybody really feels that way. I don't know that it is atrocious. And this is why a lot of us look at it and go, maybe something good out of it, because getting 0% interest on savings for the last 10 to 12 years is what is ridiculous. I'm going to open your comments, Mike. Take us from there to what our path forward is.
Yeah. Gosh, those are good. You know, so on the great question. So on the China front, I don't know. I don't know what to say. I think if we were kicked back, you know, maybe drinking some, you know, beers right now, I'd probably pile it on and just say, oh yeah, the Chinese, I mean, they're trying to, you know, bring us down, you know, when I put my suit and tie on, I don't really know. I think we're kind of all in bed together. They need us. We need them. I hate to say it that way,
yeah,
but
right.
There's a lot of vested interest and aligned incentives.
That's a good point, Mike. Thank you. That's a very good point, I think.
Yeah. We're all kind of, yeah. So that's what I'd say. Not that there's not funny business. I don't want
to
completely discredit the question. I think there definitely could be some funny business. They want to be number one. We're number one right now economically. They want to be number one. So they're coming for us. And I just think we got to have a healthy competition and go USA, right?
Let's not forget that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Main Street.
So, yeah, so then as far as the question about the interest rates, yeah, I mean, on one hand, they've gone way up. It's all relative, right? So, like, rates are still low compared to, like, 1980s,
yep.
But they're really, really high compared to the last several decades. So it's all relative. I still think there's a way to absolutely be prudent financially, even in this rate environment. So it's all contextual. When people build their budget based on one rate and then it changes, that's gonna change the budget. So you got to weigh through that stuff. You know, to kind of land the plane here at the end of my time, Tom, I just want to stress to folks, your great audience, the same thing I'm kind of telling my clients right now. Take a deep breath. Let's look at your portfolio. Let's talk about your financial goals. The same great companies that existed 2 weeks ago are still the same great companies today. It doesn't matter if these banks are being dummies. You know, same great companies from 10 years ago, most of them are still the same great companies today. Some of them are from 100 years ago, right? Still the same great companies today. So keep your eye on the ball, stay liquid, have a good emergency fund, know your budget, live within your means, have a plan in place. I hate to sound like a broken record, but you know, these are wise biblical or biblical financial stewardship principles that I really think people need to adhere to. Mm-hmm. And that'll get you home, Tom. I mean, that'll get you home if you kind of keep your eye on the ball and stay disciplined with this stuff. Don't get too emotional about it. Does that make sense?
Yes. No, I mean, that's the whole thing about our finances is that we, we have to balance emotion. There should be some of it in there, but it needs to be practical. And that's good practical advice. And
yeah.
And we'll watch it too. And you'll be back on, Mike. Hopefully.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Yeah. Good to chat with you. Be well, sir.
Thanks, Tom. You too. Take care.